Welcome back to the podcast. I'm very excited to be talking to somebody I really respect. We met online. I would say I've been following her for a while. She might not have a huge platform, but she has a very important one. Today I'm talking to Jovianne Williams. She's a yoga teacher from the UK, and she's got such an interesting take. She does a lot of diversity and equity training. And in today's podcast, we're talking about unpacking some of our belief systems as people and as yoga teachers and looking for the humanity in all of us, right? Looking for the humanity and creating diversity on the mat. So I'm excited to share with you my good friend and ally and wonderful yoga sister, Jovianne Williams. I hope you enjoy the pod. So welcome to the podcast. This is my friend, Jovianne. We have been friends for, what, 6 months now? We've been sisters, yes. Like, knowing yep. of each other. Like, actually having a I real know. Connection.
I know.
Right?
But it feels like forever, actually.
It does, because I followed you for a while, and I've been watching your work for a while. So I always feel like I know you because I follow you, but we really had a connection in January. So it's been longer than 6 months. It's actually been 8 months.
No, definitely. We have been in and out of each other's work for a while, which is great. Yeah. Which, I mean, that's like the beauty of social media, isn't it? You can connect with people who you wouldn't normally have within your circle or within your geographic reach.
Exactly.
Which is fab.
Which is fab because you are in London and I'm here in Canada. The Queen is also on our money and we still have some issues with the Queen over here, but we'll save that for another podcast or maybe we'll dive in deeper later.
Oh, who knows? We know how to talk.
Right?
We may get there.
We have the gift of the gab, so we may get there. So this is something I ask everybody on the podcast. Everybody. I want to ask what your definition of well-being is versus wellness, because I think these are two different things, wellness versus well-being. So I want to know what your definition of wellness is and what your definition of well-being is.
Cool. Let's get into this. So wellness, my definition of wellness is something that makes you feel good, mind, body, and spirit, but you are not excluded from because you don't have socioeconomic privilege. So for me, doing things that make you feel well can be going out of your back door, going for a walk, because it gives you a calmness and a stillness in your mind. It helps you to connect to yourself. And it also may involve you connecting with other people, right? So whether that's people in your family, your community, people that bring you joy. Well-being for me is something completely different. So well-being for me is not just an absence of ill health, whether that's mental, spiritual, or physical ill health. It is a place where we thrive across all three. And so what that means for me, thriving, is that not only can you connect to your emotional health, you are physically well, and you are emotionally well, but actually you can radiate and transcend that wellness into your communities to serve them better.
I like that.
That for me is what well-being is.
That communal connection. I just love that.
Yeah, because I can't be sitting in my well-being bubble and I see like my brothers and sisters and people in my community not having access to this. Like, that does not make me feel well.
No.
Right? No. It's just like when we talk about yoga and we find bliss. Well, you can't find bliss and you can't really connect to well-being if it's not equitable for all.
I think
so for me that's the difference.
I kind of feel, and the reason I called this the well-being podcast is because I kind of feel wellness has become this elitist ideology that only people with money who can go have a facial or go on a yoga retreat or what have you have access to wellness, that it's become this like clicky little club, and that is directly linked to this diet culture and the singular aesthetic of beauty and wellness and fitness that links back to white supremacy and able-bodiedness and, you know, all of, and wealth. Like, it just seems to become this really, for lack of a better term, bougie thing that only certain people have access to. So when I was mm-hmm. thinking about that, I was like, okay, I want to distance myself from that narrative and move into a space where well-being can be something that's supremely individualized, and that it can mean if you have the luxury of taking a 20-minute nap in the middle of the day, that's going to help you function better, be a better parent.
Yeah, do you know, it can be as simple. Yeah, you know, it can be as simple as wearing your favorite color.
Yes.
Like, I'm not going to be mad about this.
Yes.
You know, like...
Yes.
Let's just take it away from we have to be doing something that is out of our ordinary routines. We can just elaborate on what we are already doing.
Yes. Yes. Right? Yes. And
you know, so like, I don't know, we have dark skin, right? So we moisturize so we don't look ashy.
Yes.
That's just like the way it is.
I am moisturizer like so, on my desk. Like, look at me.
I have moisturizer in my studio. Nick thinks it's just like, why do you have moisturizer? I'm like, so I don't look ashy.
Yes.
Anyway, like, he doesn't understand it.
Yes.
So I'm like, you know what? Yep. While I'm moisturizing, do you know what? I may just do body massage.
Yes.
Because that for me is part of my well-being, right? Mm-hmm. That stimulating touch, mm-hmm. that connection with the self, making myself feel better.
Yes.
That's doesn't cost me any money.
No.
That's just me taking time. Like, and it's 2 minutes.
It is. And sometimes it's even less than that.
Do that.
Right? It's
do that.
To do that. It's to look for the little opportunities during the day where I can find ways to reduce some of the stress that I'm feeling. So maybe, because I'm always stressed. I have 2 teenage boys, and we're living through a global pandemic, and I'm creating content online, and I'm making sure my kids get everything they need, and I'm responsible for the groceries, and so there's always a lot going on. So I always try to give myself like 20 seconds, 30 seconds, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever I can that will help relieve some of the stress or give me a little bit of an out from the stress, like a distraction from the stress, so that I cannot constantly be mired in the what's next to do on my to-do list, and really incorporating moments of self-care. It might not be an hour. I think people think if you're not spending an hour on your mat, or you're not spending an hour and a half doing something, that it doesn't count. But I believe that well-being practices are cumulative.
Yeah.
So even if I get 5 minutes of not looking at my phone or turning off my computer, or... A big thing for me right now is sitting in my garden. I live in Canada, so, you know, 8 months out of the year, it's pretty miserable. It's pretty miserable here. And so I don't like outside.
You're talking from the person from the UK, right? Come on. It's crap all year round.
We have a 4-month reprise, and there's people out there who actually like winter, which is not me. And I know they enjoy like things like skiing and snowshoeing. I said to myself this winter I was going to try and dabble in some of those things. But as a person whose genealogy and ancestry comes from the West Indies by way of Africa, by way of the slave Atlantic, the transatlantic slave trade, I feel really close to those warmer climates. Like, I just, winter's not
you
really.
You put it so eloquently. I just say I'm too tropical for that shit.
Exactly. 100%. That's, in a roundabout way, that's what I mean. I'm too tropical for that shit. My mother's always like, you were born here, so I don't really think that's a good enough analogy. I go, but I'm only the first generation, so I'm still tethered to the homeland. You know what I mean? So I say that to her, and she just rolls her eyes. I don't like extreme temperatures. I don't like extreme heat, and I don't like extreme cold. So that's who I am.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Right? But, you know, this is the thing, right? It's not just enough to survive what we're going through. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to thrive, you know, and anything that we can do that just can alleviate some of what we're going through, mm-hmm. because it is exceptional, mm-hmm. right? You know, not within living memory have we been through times like this. And so anything that we can do, however small, has an impact. And, you know, I always think that we role model that stuff for the people that are around us, however big or small your platform is.
Mm.
Make it accessible.
Yes.
And that's what it's about, right? Well-being needs to be accessible.
It does. And it needs to show diversity. We need to see lots of different kinds of people mm-hmm. doing these kind of activities. And I know, as we are both brown-skinned individuals, well-being and self-care wasn't something we were taught, right? We've very much been conditioned, particularly I feel this as a Black woman, to be constantly producing, that my worth is in my labor and my work. So self-care and well-being is an act of resistance. And I saw that really beautifully modeled by Simone Biles during the 2021 or the 2020 Olympic Games that was held in 2021, where she tapped out and all of the backlash that came for her as an elite athlete. You know, she didn't feel safe in her body. Yeah. She didn't feel like she was going to be able to perform. And the things that she does are death defying. Like if she falls the wrong way.
Oh, exactly. She could have,
she could snap her neck. She could, you know, injure herself. And she wasn't willing to put herself in harm's way for the sake of entertainment. And people tried to link that to patriotism. Like, you need to take one for the team.
We had the same with a sprinter called Dina Asher-Smith in the UK. She pulled out of her, race because she, you know, she injured a hamstring and she was like, well, I'm not going to do that. But she ran her relay for her team. So she found a way through, but again, it's, you know, was not necessary. I hope she felt that she wanted to run that race for herself and for her team and not for any other reason.
I don't believe in this national pride stuff, because you're only proud of us when we're out there doing for you. You're never, you know, like, as long, I don't like that link that the only way, well, they should show up for the team and they're being lazy and such and such, you know. She's letting everybody down. She's letting her country down. And I thought to myself, how many times has her country let her down? Shall we just name that?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm supposed to live up to all these expectations. And in the reverse, you certainly wouldn't do it for me.
Well, it was kind of shown when, well, obviously we had the Euros, which is European football this year. So you call it soccer. And we had three Black players that missed their penalties, you know.
Yes.
And so they were the racist abuse that was online when they failed. I use air quotes, failed, right? Mm-hmm. Because they got to the final. So that for me is not a failure.
Yes.
But they were heroes up until that point.
Yes. Yep.
And then they were Black N-words when they didn't.
And they didn't show up in a way that people expected them, that you're supposed to be super
vile.
Vile. And again, as Black and brown folks, we're always reduced to our labor or our entertainment value. And how do we constantly rise to the occasion without having to look at our own well-being? And I would even argue that those three players probably felt a enormous amount of pressure when they were taking their penalty kicks, knowing full well that if they missed these penalty kicks, the vitriol that they would be victim to was going to be overwhelming. And I saw that one of their murals.
We knew.
I think. How could you not? How could you not?
We knew as soon as the first one didn't go in, I was like, well, I just know what's going to be all over social media tomorrow. And Nick knew. Mm-hmm. We both sat there and said,
here it comes.
We know what's coming. Here it comes. Here it comes. And it did. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not detracting away from all the love that they got, because there was a lot of love after that. So I have to kind of be balanced. And, you know, there was a lot in the media and, you know, our prime minister backtracked on this whole taking the knee because he was against it. Yeah, you know, all of that nonsense. So, you know, there was a lot of love for the players after that, which they appreciated, I know. But the fact that there has to be that collective response is in itself damning, because we're supposed to be in a post-racial society, according to...
Only white people say that.
According to my prime minister.
Only white people say that.
Yeah, according to our prime minister. We're in a post-racial society.
Says a white you know, dude at the top of all power structures. Okay, thanks.
You know.
Thanks.
Thanks for letting me know, Boris.
Yes, exactly.
You know.
Somebody forgot to tell me.
It was an isolated incident. Isolated incident, again.
Of course, because it always is, right? So that really, for us as brown people, that really impacts on our well-being. Because it doesn't matter what we do, we can't seem to get a break. So as an advocate for diversity and anti-racism work and an educator. How do you take care of yourself? Because I find this platform will chip away at your soul quickly if you don't have either a community to fall back on or some kind of well-being, you know, practice of your own. Like, how do you manage to show up time and time again? How do you manage to have the energy to continue to educate and to want to be out in a society that will, you know, villainize you the minute you step off what they consider is what they want from you?
I'm gonna say it's hard, but I've learned to hold very, very strong boundaries with my time, and the people who I spend time with and the capacity in which I spend time with them.
Nice.
So boundaries around my time, I'm really boundaried. So there is family time and then there's work time. You know, I have like even on my social media, I'll have a private social media account and I'll have my Instagram page for my business, which I may choose to share pictures of my children. I do frequently. But if anybody wants to kind of get into my DMs and contact me directly, they can do that via my website or via my personal page. I don't mix the two. I never have. I never will. I also am really clear around my expectations of people when they interact with me, either in person or on my page. I don't stand for trolling,
no,
bear baiting, any of that nonsense, because I'll just block you. I don't waste my energy trying to talk around trolls.
Why would you even bother? Like, it's not,
it's, you know, brahmacharya. And also, I don't have the time. I don't have the time, and nor do I want to waste my energy or my breath, because you know, I have finite amount of time and resources, and I'm not going to be spending it on people who are not ready. First and foremost, not ready to have an educated conversation, so I'm not going to waste my time. And by also setting those boundaries around how I interact with people in real life. So you're either a friend and you're in my inner circle, or you're an acquaintance and you're for business only. And that sounds really hard, but I have been burned too many times mixing the two. And that usually comes through people taking advantage of my expertise, my kindness, and my knowledge. And I use expertise and knowledge as two different things. My knowledge as a brown person, my knowledge and my lived experience, and my expertise as an educator, as a, you know, highly educated female who's worked corporately for over a decade. So if you want me in any of those capacities, then there will be clear rules of engagement. And if you breach those, expect the agreement to be null and void and we'll be parting company. That's simple. And I just find that those people that are in my circle know that they're in my circle and they've got my back 1,000,000%. So it's usually friendships where I don't have to try, but they'll show up for me.
Those are the best.
Effortlessly.
Yes.
Yes. You know, that doesn't mean that we speak every day, but they know who they are and they are so appreciated, because, you know, when you do this work, like we've discussed before, it's death by a thousand cuts. You relive your trauma every day, and then you learn about different trauma from other marginalized groups. And whilst you may not have lived their experience, you can absolutely empathize with what they're going through because you have lived your own trauma from being marginalized in a similar way. So for me, that vicarious identification, which is what I would call it, I think it's the only way I can describe it, is because we're linked by a trauma.
Yes.
And that's what binds us.
Yes.
in community. And that's why I kind of say, well, I don't just show up for black and brown people because that intersects.
Yes.
So I am bound in a solidarity with them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's how I hold my boundaries. That's how I keep myself well. And, you know, I do the usual stuff. You know, I like getting my nails done. Yeah,
me too.
I do that. You know, I like getting my hair done.
Just got my nails done. Ooh, they look very similar. Yeah. And you and I have talked about,
you know,
that.
And I do all of that stuff. Yeah. And you know, I like to go for walks. I like to go for a run, but it's usually with my kids. And I like spending family time. I like spending one-on-one time with my husband. And we do all of those things. And I like cooking food. And I am more than just my work. Mm-hmm. I am more than just my work. I am more than just someone who can educate other people on their isms. Mm-hmm. I am more than that.
And I think it's important for us as educators to keep reminding people. Like, some days where I take a break or a step back from the constantly educating people, and I put up fun videos of people dancing or me weeding my garden. Like you, the other day you put up on your page, you going for a walk with your kids, which looked like a lot like when I go for a walk with my kids. They're always like way far ahead of me or way far behind me. They're never walking with me. They're either behind me or in front of me. And I think it's important to have a full understanding of people's humanity. So often, you know, I post a lot of political things. I post a lot about, you know, trauma, about body image, about diet culture, about race, about equity. I post a lot of that stuff. And then I'll get to a point where I feel a little tired and I want to take a little step back from it and I want to sit with it. So on the flip side of that, I'll be posting all the fun things. I made pancakes. I was eating Snickers. I was digging in the garden. I went for a run. I'm on my paddleboard, whatever it is, right? I'm on my bike. And I'll post all that stuff. And I'll get a bunch of followers who kind of shift in at the time that I'm posting this fluffy stuff. And then we'll get a shot in the face when I post something that's, you know, about the work that I do because I'm impassioned about something. I'm like, I need to share this. We need to bring awareness to this. This is what's happening. And so then I'll come back and then I'll inadvertently get a message from people going, I don't come here to hear about your politics. And here's what that tells me when people make those kind of comments on my pages. That tells me that you are only interested in part of my humanity, the part that makes you feel good, the part that serves your agenda, the part that's free to you to use for whatever it is you need to use. That's the only thing you're interested in me. You're only interested in me for my labor, right? You're not interested in me as a person with all the things that I have to share. So then that's time for you to go. Either you can leave on your own and I'll block you. And by the way, it's not an airport.
Absolutely.
You don't need to announce you're leaving, because you announcing you're leaving isn't me going to be like, oh, did I hurt your feelings? I'm going to change my opinion. I'm going to take it down, which I think you think my feelings will be hurt when you leave. I actually want you gone. Now that you've showed me exactly who you are, you're not practicing yoga for one, so you shouldn't be on my page because you aren't in self-study. You aren't looking at the entirety of humanity. You're only interested in what I can provide you. How I can make you feel better. You're not interested in having a relationship. So there's lots of other people who are posting that fluffy stuff all over the internet. Go find them to help you make you feel better. I'm not here for you. I'm not your audience, and I don't care if you leave. Leave. Bye.
Leave. It's an open door.
Bye. It's not a public platform. My page is not public. It's my living room. And if you come in here and take a shit on the carpet, you have to clean it up and get the fuck out. Sorry, this got explicit. Quick. But I get in my feelings about
that. Alan will be putting explicit, yeah.
And that makes it, hey, that more people listen to it when it's explicit, because then it's fun.
No, you know, I just feel like it's just more of extraction. It's just more extraction, you know, because I follow Diane Bondi. I can't be, you know, appropriating yoga. I can't be a racist. I am, you know, teaching accessibly. I'm, you know, well, no, it's not. You know, I can go to the, like, I was listening to a podcast by Nova Reed. She's also an amazing anti-racism activist. She was saying it's like going to the gym and taking loads of selfies and then not using any of the equipment.
We know people like that. I see people like that at the gym. Yes.
You see them all the time. Yeah. And
I'm familiar.
that just really stuck with me, and I was like, oh my gosh, like these are the black square people.
Yes.
These are the ones that these are the ones that have classes that are open to everybody, whatever their abilities and experiences, yet nobody can use props or shows their use of props at all. We know who you are. Please don't.
Right.
Please
You're not
don't.
fooling
You know what? If
anybody.
you're going to teach that
Yeah.
way, if you're going to teach that way, stay in your
Yeah.
lane. Go and teach like Les Mills, body balance. Go and teach all of those things because they are
Yeah,
great.
totally.
They are
And there are
great,
people
but
who
it's
need
not
it.
accessible
Yeah.
yoga. And there are people who need it, and there are people who benefit from that. But please don't start, don't please use your performative marketing tools and calling yourself an accessible yoga teacher and that classes are open for all, because that's what puts people off when they come to a class and it is nothing like that. And then they have the false conception that they cannot do yoga. And that will piss me
It
off.
flies in the face of
It
ahimsa.
really
It
does.
does. It's not truthful, Satya. And it fly and
It's not truthful.
it
It's
creates violence because when that person has that moment on the mat where they can't do the practice or they feel left behind, they feel alone and alienated. Especially if they're moving into the space, maybe in a bigger body or they have a disability, they're already feeling a certain kind of way coming into the space. And then to have that validated by not being able to do the class or not being offered a variation of the pose or not being seen by the teacher, you've just recreated that trauma for somebody, right? Like there's lots of
And you
poses.
know, this is the thing. This is the thing. And I'm just like, offering variations of the pose don't just mean options to intensify.
Right.
They also
Right.
include,
Yes.
like they also
Yes.
include use of props. They also include supine variations. They also include using the wall. They also include using a strap.
Yes. Come on now. Come on now.
And this is like, this is like basic. This is basic
This is the bare
stuff that we
minimum.
should
This is the
know.
bare
As
minimum.
this is, and this is out without going into, gender bias cues. This is without going into, your marketing that is featuring one type of body. This is before we've even got to, social media and how you are marketing your
Yeah.
classes. This is before we even get to that. This is like showing up for the most ex what should be the accessible part of yoga for many, many people.
Yes.
And it's
And it's
not.
not 100%, 100%.
And it's not. And you're teaching just the physical shapes. I don't even want to call them
Yep.
poses, the physical shapes. And you're not teaching breath, and you're not teaching meditation, and you're appropriating this practice, but telling us that it's for everybody when it's for nobody, apart from people who look like
Or
you.
yourself, right? You're up there like showboating, or you're up there showing everybody your super flexible hamstrings and your strength, that a lot of it may have been genetically, enhanced, but you're not being truthful. Whenever I teach something and somebody requests a specific pose and I'm able to do it, I first of all say, okay, I've been on my mat for 30 plus years. I've been on my mat for 40 plus years. So I've been doing this pose a really long time. And B, both
Oh,
my
yeah.
parents are athletes or were athletes at one point. And I'm swimming in this genetic pool of flexible hamstrings and open hips and body strength that I just came about naturally, right? This is nothing that I
Yeah.
have actually worked on. In my life now, as a woman in my 50s, I'm working on maintaining that strength, right? But this is something that was naturally gifted to me. So don't be
Yeah.
impressed by my abilities here. And I'm going to show you a couple of different ways
Yeah.
you could explore these sensations in your body, knowing that what I'm
Yeah.
doing is not required of you.
Exactly. I've said this so many times to my students, and I say to them, look, I could do handstands all day long. I can do back bends all day long because I have hypermobility in my lower back and my
Me too.
shoulders. But guess what? It's not good for my
Yes.
body. It's not good for my body. What I need to do is work my core strength and glutes because I could go and bust out like wheel pose, just now. Yep. Like that
without
is,
any
I don't
warm
have to
up,
be warm.
Just go. Yep.
Just do it. And I've always been able
Yep.
to do it. From a child, I've always been able to
Yep.
do it. I've been able to do handstands, but I don't practice them because they're not good for my body. I can teach them. I can teach all the steps to that if that's what you want for your practice. But you will never find those things on my
Yep.
Instagram page because I have not had to work hard to do those postures. And they feel great in my body, but they're not the best thing for my body. I need to do the postures like boat pose, which is everybody's nemesis,
Yes.
unless you're blessed with open hip flexors and
And
hamstrings
a strong
and
core.
really strong
Yep.
abdominals, which I'm
Yep.
not. Those are the ones that I have to work with. I have to work through but dolphin pose to build strength. That's not flashy.
No. No.
That's really like this is like working just strength
Yes.
through shoulders. That I have to lift
Yeah.
weights
Yep.
now
Me too.
in my
Yep.
practice. I have to work squats. I mean, who likes, I
Nobody
have to do,
watches.
who likes that? Nobody. Everybody hates them. But these are the things. So if I'm posting all these beautiful pictures of me in back bends and everyone's like, ooh, ah,
Right.
I'm going to come to Joan's show. I'm like, no,
That's not true.
don't, because it's really just fake news,
is, yeah.
to quote an idiot in the White House.
Right.
It is fake news. Like, really, the whole of it is fake news because I have not had to work to achieve those postures. And that's why you won't find them on my Instagram feed. What you will see is me struggling really hard to run
I feel
because
that.
I need to work other things.
Yeah.
And I don't also want people to feel like if they to be a yoga teacher, to enjoy yoga, they need to be able to be that way.
Yes, and do all the things.
No.
I feel you.
No,
My
it's not necessary.
posterior,
It's not
it's not
necessary.
necessary. And I think we need to, for a long time when Instagram first came out, it was all these poses of people doing these death-defying, gravity-defying, super flexible kind of poses. And then we got stamped that this is yoga. And if you weren't able to do these really performative poses, that somehow you weren't spiritually connected or whatever. And and a lot of these people who came to, to yoga had a gymnastics background or had a skating background or had a dancing background where they had this body awareness already. And yoga was attractive to them because it held a lot of the same, the calisthenics part of yoga, the postures part of yoga had a very similar feel. These were shapes that they had done before, right? And so we end up seeing all these people on the front of magazines doing all these things, and then this yoga lens becomes very narrow into a very able-bodied, light-skinned, cisgender, feminine outline, right, of what yoga looks like, as opposed to the system in which we view the world, the system in which we connect to each other, the system in which we connect to our bodies, this right use of energy that's not creating harm, this telling the truth, this showing up for other people, this being in community. All that went out the window when the West appropriated yoga and distilled it down to a series of poses we do on the mat. And to this day, if somebody's not familiar with the practice, the first thing they want to know is A, how many calories can I burn in this class? And B, when will I be able to do handstand? Never, and I don't know.
Yeah, handstands. You know what? There's nothing wrong with handstands, but I've come to dislike what they stand for currently in yoga. I can do them. I don't particularly enjoy them. Just because
Yep.
they don't bring anything to my
Right.
practice. They don't bring anything to me. I'm not connected to my body because it's something I've always had to do. So I don't have to be mindful in that pose. I don't have to be mindful in back bends because I know that my body will just do
Yep.
it. So what's the point? Because the movement of yoga, the movement part is like, who did I explain it to now? I explained it to someone as the asana, the physical practice of yoga is like, where you wash, if you do hand washing, if you ever have like any delicates that you have to hand wash. And this is like, your practice is like getting out all the dirt and wringing it out, right? You're getting everything out that you need and you're shaking it off. So what you can hang it up and it for be to be still and dry and settle. So that is all that your physical practice is. It's taking out all the stuff, like all the the chatter of the mind. It's all the nooks and crannies that maybe you need to move out of your body. It's getting away all those niggles, all those things that are kind of in your head, so that finally, when you come and sit or lie or be still, so however that shows up in your practice, that you have found your peace.
I love that. I love that.
That is all that it is. That is all that it is. And you don't need to do a handstand necessarily to find your peace.
Yes. That's worth repeating. You don't have to do a handstand to find your peace, right? I love that. I love that. Tell me a little bit about the yoga community you currently reside in. What are some, what really struck it for me, because you and I have a very similar personality, I think, and a very similar outlook on the world. People who are my friends, with the exception of people who don't live in the same country as me, for example, are people who have been to my house, who are people that I spend time with outside the yoga studio. If I haven't spent time with you outside the yoga studio space, we're probably not friends. If you don't have my phone number to text me, we're probably not friends. And I'm very careful. I've been burned several times by folks who either want to use me for my platform or my positioning, or for, they think there's some kind of credibility linked to me and that they're trying to cash in on that. And I see you pretty early on. And I've had a lot of situations, even in my little tiny yoga community here, where I've had fallings out where I'm just like, I can't, this is not what we're doing. And it's always shocking to me how quickly, when you set your boundaries and you tell people what you will and won't tolerate, how quickly they turn on you and use their own insecurity that they project onto you. Like, if you were nicer to me or whatever. Have you experienced that in your community?
So I'm going to be really careful.
Yes, just be really careful.
Just not, try not to get, you know, I'm not going to name names because it's not chic.
No, and it's not.
And I'm a chic lady.
Yes. Chic and moisturized.
Because you know.
Chic and moisturized.
Exactly. You know, first of all, I'm going to caveat the people that are going to come for me with not all white women. Can I just pause here? For the people that are going to comment and say, not all white women are like this. And you've covered it off beautifully, because I have black, brown and white friends who are in my circle.
Yes, me too.
And they know who they are. And they show up for me unconditionally. Yes. They are my team. They have my back. And I love them dearly. Yes. And they're in my life for a reason. Yes. Because they are there for me up front and center anytime that I need them, and it is effortless being with them.
That is a true friendship. Just saying.
Right? It's just effortless. And the friendship is flawless. So my friends will know this anyway. Right. So for all the people coming for me saying not all white women.
We know.
Shut up.
Exactly. We know not all white women, but enough of y'all. But enough of you all for us to call it out.
We know.
Right?
Just be. Yeah. So I'm going to just talk from my own experience. Yes. And certainly if you can identify, that's great. But please don't come in the comments with not all white women, because we'll just delete them. I'm just going to caveat it now. So I recently had an experience working for a company who, you know, owned yoga studios and teacher training. Mm-hmm. I first got involved with them because I did my initial teacher training with them, which was wonderful, by the way. I'm not going to do them a disservice at all because the content was good. But I think as you become a yoga teacher, and I transitioned from being a yoga teacher to moving beyond my 200 hour and unlearning some of the things that I learned in my 200 hour. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So to become an educator, I had to unlearn what I learned, because I learned the way in which I was practicing yoga didn't fit with the way that I learned yoga before I became a teacher. So for those of you that don't know, I learned yoga organically. I learned yoga in India. I was there for 4 years on an expat assignment, and I had no intention of becoming a teacher, zero intention of becoming a teacher. And I came back to the UK, and the yoga that I had learnt and had practiced was just nowhere to be seen. So I was just like, you know what, I'm not going to keep searching for something that is within me, because I don't need to look any further than myself. So what I'm going to do is formalize what I know, which is what I did, which was great. And then I started teaching. And I started teaching all different shapes and sizes, because I found that the people that were coming to my classes weren't necessarily your Instagram yogis. They were people who were coming back from injury. They were older students. They were students that had disabilities. They were students that had actually felt excluded from those spaces. And as I began to teach, I began to teach kind of going back to my roots of what I learned in Bangalore. And I started to unlearn a lot of the things that I had been taught in my 200 hour. So I started to learn from the wonderful Kali Skut, and she's just wonderful.
Amazing.
And I learned from my, I went back to seeing my yoga teacher from India, because she only lives up the road from me, only 20 minutes away. So I started going back to her classes, and I started to feel more connected to my practice. All the while still, obviously, working for this company. And I started to notice things that were bothering me, you know, just lack of representation in marketing, in course material. And I'm like, this yoga is not for everybody. This yoga is not really doing it for me anymore. So I, you know, as usual, kind of, as you know, you see my Instagram, I don't kind of hold back from saying what I want to say. If something is on my mind, that's my space to be able to say it. So I said what I said.
I said what I said.
I said what I said, and I make no apologies for it. Sorry, not sorry. And you know, the fragility that I got from a particular person on that course, I would say the owner, was horrendous. Was, you know, and I got all of this, like, not directly to me, because obviously having a face-to-face conversation with someone was obviously too much hard work. Right. So to hear it second hand, and it's just not nice to be told that what you're teaching is not in line with their values. What you're teaching is not the right way.
Wow.
I mean, what is the right way to teach yoga,
yeah,
right? Because there can't be one way of teaching yoga when there is no one type of body.
Right.
You know, that that they won't be made to feel bad for occupying a white, slim female body.
Which is about you. Nobody's here to make you feel bad. That's you internalizing whatever information that is. That's your own fragility.
So, you know, that, you know, for me, one, that's really sad.
Yeah.
So I go back to, if you're being triggered by something, understand where it's showing up in your body, right? So we've all done about, you know, the koshas. Where is it showing up? Is it showing up in your chest? Does it feel tight? What is it that I have said or done that is making you have a physical reaction? Are you noticing it? Are you in your body? Are you noticing it? Secondly, where's your breath? Because if you're practicing yoga, if you're as experienced as you say you are, you'll be living, eating, breathing, all of this stuff. So you will know. You will know where your energy is at. You will know what vibes you're getting in your own body that has triggered you. What are your emotions telling you? Are you angry? Are you angry that someone with less experience than you, that is occupying a brown body, that is perhaps shining a light on an area that you are not expert in, rather than identifying it and naming it and saying, Yes, that is something that I don't know a lot about, but I am committed to learning. Or we can say, no, we don't want to go there. This is not what we're about. Goodbye. Where's the opportunity for you to learn?
Yes.
It's not there. And for me, I no longer work for that company, which is great.
Yeah.
But for me, it was really one eye-opening that obviously I was being tokenized through my work, through my presence on teaching cohort. And two, that the commitment to doing better was absolutely performative. Because if you are teaching yoga, if you know your history and philosophy as you say you do, you will understand that you're acting from a place of your kleshas. So we'll start with avidya. Yeah, here's the misconception of our true reality, living under the delusion of a superiority of a particular body type. I'm not going to go and say white supremacy for those people who are not engaged in an anti-racism work, but I'm going to break it down for you. I'm going to keep it simple. Centering a body that is able, that is cisgendered, that is white, that is slim, that is in a heteronormative relationship are at the center, straight sized,
Yes.
right? And this is where kind of we go from there and you go to asmita. And this is where it comes into the ego, right? So this is where this person is acting from a place of ego, creating an image of themselves and their company. That is, whether that's external. I want people to believe that I'm a successful business person, and the internal asmita, the I amness, the internal ego that is like, I am knowledgeable in all things yoga because I have this number of
Yes.
accreditations, I have this number of hours
And I can do
teaching,
a
and
handstand.
I can do all these
Yes.
poses. I've been teaching for this number of years. I have this number of studios. I have this teacher training. I have that. This means bullshit. They are all false projections because you have been trapped within those projections and believe them to be true. That is asmita. And if you can't understand that as a yoga teacher, you're not teaching yoga because you're not embodying what yoga is. Because if you were doing your self-study, your svadhyaya, you would know that this is the place where you're acting from. It's raga, right? The attachment, the attraction for things that bring satisfaction to ourselves, the desire for people to see and believe this projection of who we are. And when that is threatened in particular by somebody who is the antithesis of who you are, who is the complete opposite, who should not even in your mind even be sharing space with you. You have two choices. You either learn, understand, act from a place of
Yes.
empathy and
Yes.
understanding and humility, or you go into defensive mode and you continue with blindsided vision and continue with this blinkered desire to hold on to what you believe your right version of yoga is.
It's the fear of the death of your perception of who you are, or people not buying in to that. So it's that final one, the fear of death, the fear of the death of the image. What does that mean for me? What does it mean for my studio? What does it mean for my teachers? So if anybody's going to bring the truth into my awareness, I'm going to smash that down because it's good.
Shut them
Shut them
down.
down because that's
Shut them
going to
down.
be the death of what I believe. It's going to be the death of my ideas, as opposed to, do I have something to learn here? Which is every time I have a conflict with somebody, I always take a step back, unless they triggered me and I lost my shit, which happens, I'm human. I take a step back and I go, why am I rubbed? And usually I'm rubbed because something they have said is true and I know it's true and I don't want to admit it. Or the rub is they're being superior, right? They somehow think, maybe the color of their skin, how old they are, their accreditation, the amount of degrees they have on the wall. How dare I be talking to them in this certain way because I am who I am. So those are the two things. But the
it's ego.
Right, ego, the two things. But the minute I have that rub, I always pause. I go, oh, there's a rub here. This is how I use my yoga. I'm going to sit with this for a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit with this. What's the rub? What's the rub? What's the rub? And then I make those connections, right? This is what the rub is. This is the
and
stuff
I'm going
to unpack.
And that's the thing, right? It all stems from avidya, which is this ignorance, this delusion of what you believe the truth to be. And the shutting things off and not wanting to deal with it is the vesha. It's repulsion.
Yes.
It's the opposite of, you know, raga, which is the attachment. It's actually, right, okay, so someone's giving me that mirror moment and I can see what I need to know, but I don't want to look.
Right.
So get rid
right.
of it. I don't want to look.
Yeah.
Someone showed me the mirror. I've seen it. I don't want to look. Goodbye. And, you know, because we can't sit in that suffering.
Yes.
Because collectively, and I'm going to use the term white people so white people don't come for me. But collectively, white people have never had to act with a collective consciousness.
Mm.
Unlike black people and brown people. And the reason is white people have always been treated as individuals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Black and brown people have not.
Yeah.
We have never had the privilege to be seen as individuals for our humanity.
It's true.
And so when this mirror moment happens with white people, with fragile white women who are liberal air quotes, liberal, because they're the worst, this revulsion, this kind of, this is not me, this is, you know, is because
you.
Your tolerance for being told or being shown that there is another way, you know, that there are two types of truths. There is absolutely a place for the yoga that you teach. It's asana practice.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's an asana
yes.
class. But if you're teaching the fullness of yoga, that's not where you are. So you pick a lane.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to come into this lane, it means you have to do a lot of internal work. It means you have to know about your kleshas and how they're showing up for you. It doesn't mean that you see it and you walk away.
Right, right. You don't get to pick and choose.
No, it's like taking the selfie in the gym and then pissing off back home, you know. Like, you're not going to actually...
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is exactly, it's the performative stuff that we have all been seeing over, you know, the past 8-9 months
yeah.
now that Black Lives Matter has kind of dulled down
yeah.
and the Republicans have are not in office and, you know, and COVID has overtaken a lot of what we're talking about. And I see this apathy creeping in.
Right back.
And it's like, okay, well now,
yeah.
and like now that the spotlight's not on me, now that it's not flavor of the
yes.
month, now that no one's really looking in my direction, I'm just going to walk
yes.
away because actually it's easier than having to deal with some of the things that people are showing me. And actually, oh, you know, protecting the business, I don't buy it. It's bullshit.
100%.
If you were protecting your business, you would make it accessible for everybody because that's only a good thing.
It's only a good thing. If you were to do things purely,
it's only a good thing.
Purely by capitalistic reasons. Wouldn't you want more people in your studio? Because wouldn't that mean more money for you? Like seriously, for no other reasons, just for purely, I'm
yeah.
trying to keep my business afloat. Doesn't it make more sense to open the door to more people? Doesn't it? It's what I've noticed.
I mean, why wouldn't you want to do the right thing?
I don't
thing?
Know.
I just think, you know, why wouldn't you want to do it? I just, is it too hard? Is it too much like hard work? Is it that you have to do the internal self-study first?
Yeah.
Is it that you have... I'm not asking you to apologize for occupying a body.
Yeah.
What I'm asking you to do is have a look around in the real world.
Yeah.
Have a look around at who actually is out there and understanding how we can make it accessible to everybody.
100%.
That's not rocket science.
It's the bare
That's
minimum,
not,
though.
I mean...
It's the bare minimum.
I'm not asking you to split the atom. Again,
right,
you know,
yeah.
I'm just saying,
yeah,
maybe there's another way.
Yeah.
Maybe there's another way.
Yeah.
And there is, and you know, this whole thing about owning a way to teach yoga is, I don't know if you've read this book, They Were Her Property, White Women as Slave Owners in the American South by Stephanie E. Jones Rogers.
Writing it down.
Is an incredibly powerful, difficult read for listeners. If you are going to read this book, especially Black and Brown sisters, brothers, read this with some self-care. This really speaks to the relationship of white and Black women and this ownership. So it talks about, you know, this bundle of rights that white slave owners and women slave owners had over Black and Black bodies. And it was like the right to possess, the right to use, the right to manage, the right to income of this thing. So it wasn't even like they were a person, it was a thing.
No, property.
You know, the right to any fruits and profits of this thing, you know, and you don't have any rights over my lived experience. You don't have any rights over my personal space, whether that be in social media or otherwise. You don't have any rights over the way in which I choose to teach. You don't. You just don't have any ownership over any of that. And when I believe those things are challenged, or were challenged in my case, then that relationship was fundamentally broken. And it could not be repaired because nobody has ownership over me.
Absolutely.
And I draw that boundary. If you try that shit, you'll be blocked. And that's what happened.
Which...
I don't play.
No, and I think we all need to be standing in this. Like, this is a new concept for a lot of us Black and Brown women in, like, standing up and pushing back. Like, I think for a long time there was this go along and get along for our own personal safety, or we didn't feel we had the power, or we didn't feel we had the words or the language. But I think things have fundamentally changed now, where we are saying you don't have ownership to this. And what you said just like gave me a rub. Like I felt like the back of my throat close up a little bit, because I think a lot of people still believe those tenets that you said. Ownership to all the property or anything you've created from that individual. I think people walk around in the world unknowingly continuing to perpetuate those tenets that were started during the times of enslavement. I think somewhere in our in our learned cell, somewhere in our cell, somewhere in our DNA, this has been ingrained right into the nucleus. And it's going to take, I would say, more than seven generations, probably 14 generations, for people to unlearn it. But here's the thing, they got to be willing to unlearn it. They would have to be able to read that book and go, this is what I believe. And I know this is what I believe. And how do I unpack it and then learn it? And people aren't willing.
Exactly. You know, because if you're a white person and you read They Were Her Property, if you read this book with an open mind and heart, it's really a shocking read for you. But for
us,
for me, for Diane, this just underpins why we have an inherent mistrust for having relationships with white women. Because, and again, I say not all white women, because I caveated it at the beginning.
So don't
come
for me. Somebody's going to come for that.
Someone's going to come for me for this.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm here.
But this is why. This is why, because it's always about extraction of what you can get, you know, building wealth. Black women in enslavement were highly prized when they were of reproductive age. Why? Because they would increase
the
slaveholders' wealth.
The value. That's when the medical system actually cared about Black women and birth. It stopped when we stopped being valued.
And, you know, and the same thing goes that, you know, like we said, if we stopped producing the things that can be reshared on, yoga teachers and yoga teacher training schools pages that, you know, the reshare, and we stopped producing all that stuff that made them look like they actually gave a shit, then I'm sure my followers would drop off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I'm fucking bothered, by the way. Just fuck off and go if you don't want to listen.
Right. I say that all the time. There's the door. Help.
Please just go.
You know, help yourself. Yeah. Or I can help you and block you.
But really, you know, just the fragility of it all. Like, who am I?
Yeah.
Like, really? I don't have a huge platform. That doesn't interest me. Yeah. You know, my work is in community, right, where it always has been, always will be. I'm not in it for the likes. If I was, I'd choose a fucking better topic than anti-racism, diversity and inclusion. I'd choose stuff that was going to make me, like, I don't know. I might choose skincare.
Right.
I might choose something really great. I might choose shopping. Oh, I don't know.
Baking,
I might choose fashion.
Whatever.
I might choose all of those things.
Food
whatever,
credits.
Whatever. I could list off like 10 things. But I'm telling you, inclusivity in yoga and wellness spaces, let me tell you, there's no money in that. There's no followers in that. There's no likes. You just get grief. You get hassle. You get bullshit in your DMs is what you get. So really, it's just, it's incredible that it still goes on, and not surprising for those of us that have worked in those spaces, actually. Not surprising. Not surprising that it goes on in yoga, because we're not immune. It's not all love and light, this toxic bullshit. It's not like that, because it's capitalist and people want to make money. And the quickest way they will make money is by focusing on their core market, which is not anybody that doesn't fit this box, this really narrow box. And if you don't fit in that box, don't expect the practice to be for you.
Absolutely.
If you're going to a studio or a teaching school
like that,
just don't expect to see it.
100%.
And we all know who they are. You'll know who they are because you'll go onto the Instagram and you'll see that it's all about ego, right?
Mm-hmm.
You will see the performative poses. You won't see that they're uplifting anybody else.
No. It's true.
It won't be there.
It's true. It's just, they're not capable.
You just have to use your, I don't know, what do we call it? Vichara?
Yes.
Or discernment.
Yes.
You just have to tap into that. Like, open your eyes and see.
Yes.
Without those veils. And you'll see for yourself. And you make your own judgment.
Yeah.
I'm not here to tell you what to do.
No, and we're not here to convince you of anything either. It's up to you to do the work. We're not here to convince you of anything. We're here to show you the truth from our perspective.
Nope.
Right? To show you the truth of the other way that you talked about. There might be another way. We're here to show you the truth of that other way. And you can choose to open your eyes to it, or you can choose to walk blindly down the path. You'll never clear those veils if you don't sit in deep self-study. You never will. And let's be honest, self-study is hard. Nobody really wants to do it, because there's going to be something that you're going to have to unpack and learn and look at. Nobody wants to do that. You have to choose to want to do that. And for people of color, we've never really had a choice. We've always been in our own self-reflection, because any interactions you have out in the real world is always like, what did they mean by that? This felt this way. They said it this way.
And did that really happen?
Did that really happen? Only to be gaslit and be told that that didn't really happen. So then you start doubting yourself. So this is the ongoing loop of trauma that happens for folks of color, for folks in marginalized or underestimated or traditionally, historically excluded groups. We're always in this constant self-reflection that if you're not a part of those groups, you're not in. And you get to like set the bar. And unfortunately for you, times are changing and people are speaking out and people have language and people have platforms and people are speaking up. So it's time for you to sit and listen, as painful as that is going to be. Right? And I know there's a whole bunch of you out there who will. Like Jovianne, I have great friends who are white. I have friends who are Asian. I have friends who are Black. And I made it a point of embracing all of humanity. When I see people and I jive with them and we have a lived experience, it makes it so much easier. And then people who are interested in that lived experience and doing their own work, I want to be around. Not people who are projecting and being performative. And if we've had a falling out, bye.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I just have to say, it's not like when you burn bridges that it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
I think I
yeah.
put that on my Instagram, right? It hurts.
Yeah, it does.
It hurts.
A lot.
It really does, because you kind of think that, well, I unpack this, but you know, you think about what you could have done differently. How did you allow yourself to be taken advantage of?
Yes, that's the line for me.
How could that have happened? What did you do wrong?
Yeah.
And the answer is nothing.
Yeah.
It's a reflection of them, truly, fundamentally. And I will say that burn the bridges, I think I put, but what comes out of the ashes is something completely beautiful.
I love that.
Because you can be courageously, authentically yourself
yes.
and not answer to anybody else.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what it is. And I always say to people when they're doing this work, if they choose to do this work, because it is a choice, mm-hmm. like I
totally.
Can't force you to be an inclusive teacher or to even embody this work is so hard. It's so hard that you will always be in a state of becoming.
Yes. Oh.
You will never
yeah.
be...
Yeah.
that final
fully realized
thing, you know, that fully realized being.
Yeah.
I just want people to understand that, because this process of unlearning is continuous.
Mm.
So I don't really resonate with people who say, you know, I am anti-racist. I'm like, you're anti-racist. I'm only still becoming
yes.
anti-racist.
Agreed.
I'm still in a place where I am becoming
yes.
because I'm still every day going through the weeds, finding things that I am not doing
yep.
well on, that I am lazy
yep.
with, that I am learning all the time. So if I am still becoming, how are you already
yes.
there?
Yeah.
I am still on my journey,
yep.
right?
Till I die.
And
right?
Yeah.
Till I die. It's
so
going.
This is the thing, right? So let's try and get rid of that attachment to the outcome of when you think you're going to get a gold star at the end. When I say, oh, you know, congratulations,
mm-hmm.
you're now like anti-racist, you know, and everything else that comes with it, you really are inclusive, because it fucking isn't going to happen.
No.
Let me just tell you, there's no gold star, there's no prize at the end of this, and you will just find yourself in a constant state of becoming and transformed.
Mm.
So that's what I try and say when I said that I unlearned what I learned when I became a yoga teacher.
Yeah.
I transformed from a asana teacher.
Mm.
I unlearned and unpacked some of those things that were getting in the way of connecting to my own practice that I'd learned those years ago. And then I learned from the gatekeepers of this practice that were from that country of origin, from that culture. So I learned from those teachers that reconnected me to my roots and my way of teaching. And I'm not saying, by the way, my way is the right way, but it helped me connect to my practice on a much deeper level that allowed me to be the yoga teacher and educator that I am now. Because it's a transformation, and I am still learning.
Yes.
It is lifelong study. It's transformational. I think if you do this work and you're not transformed, you're not doing the work.
Agreed.
If you're not if you don't feel like you're always in a state of becoming, of unlearning, of relearning, of, I know, like I find myself like apologizing and trying to unpick some of the messiness of
yeah.
relearning
yeah.
again, then I don't know that you're doing it. And I'm not saying everyone needs to get therapy, because maybe therapy is not for everybody, but certainly to do this work in the way in which transforms you, you need to look deeper than the superficial.
Agreed. And that's the key to well-being. And I think I'm going to leave it right there, because I think it is a perfect place to leave it. And I want to ask you a couple of rapid fire questions. So bringing it back to what you love personally, But I yeah. love that. You tied it up so nicely in a bow at the end there. So let's have a little fun. It's been deep. Let's have a little fun.
Go.
Coffee or tea?
Neither. I drink water. Oh,
good for you. Good for you. Coffee or tea. Night.
No, truly. It's really fucked up because after I got pregnant, I have now got an allergy. Oh, like I have an intolerance to caffeine.
Damn it.
So I love coffee.
But it doesn't
but
love
I can't
you.
Drink
doesn't
it.
Love you.
No.
Morning or evening?
Yeah. Evening.
Yes, as we're talking here now. Favorite chocolate bar?
Snickers.
Snickers! Woo! I knew we were sisters. That's it for me. I could just eat them until I die. What is your favorite well-being practice that you do for yourself?
Sleep.
Sleep. Fantastic. And if you had a wish for the world, what would it be?
That we could see each other's humanity.
Oh, me too. One day, I hope for that. Jovianne, this was...
That's the key, isn't
yes, it? Yes. It makes it puts a little tear in my eye. Jovianne, this has been amazing. I often say that we are sisters in some kind of way because everything that you've said today
yeah.
has resonated. And I just feel such a unique bond when I talk to you, even though we are generations apart and a whole ocean apart from each other. I feel like somewhere we are connected either by blood or birth.
Must be
or,
connected.
You know, energy. So it's been really special talking to you today. Where can we find you for those who want to? And don't worry, I'll put them in the show notes. Yeah,
sure.
Who want to connect with you.
No worries. Sure, you can find me at Esprit Yoga Studio. On Instagram, I'm on Esprit Yoga. On Facebook, you can find me at www.esprityogastudio.co.uk.
Wonderful. And we'll
online.
Be sharing all of that in the show notes. Once again, thank you, Jovianne, for agreeing to be on the Intentional Wellbeing
Thank you so
podcast.
Much.
And I love it. I love talking
thank
you to
you. Thank you for having me.
And we'll catch you next time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Wonderful. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We have a PDF with some self-study points for you for some of the things that we talked about. We also made references to some books that will also be in this PDF. This is a wonderful opportunity for you to experience some swadhyaya, right? Some self-study around this. So this podcast was designed to give you a little bit of something to think about and to work on. As always, growth continues. Once again, thank you for listening to the podcast. You can listen to this podcast anywhere that podcasts are found. Make sure that you give us a like, a share. Share this podcast with people who you think might benefit from it. And we're excited to keep this going. If there's anybody who would like me to interview on the podcast, I'm excited to talk to everyone who's interested in equitable yoga spaces. Thank you for joining me, and we'll catch you next time.